everyone, and welcome to Another Bite, where we rewatch the most innovative and intriguing pitches from Shark Tank. I'm Jory, and I'm joined by Ariel.
Hey, friends.
And John.
All right, let's do this.
Abracadabra. You know, I never used to like magic, but it was entertaining to see this founder use a magic trick to make all the sharks disappear. Is his product really a new wave in AR, or is it all an illusion? We'll find out after this break. Teams everywhere are dealing with a serious problem. A productivity problem. It's no secret, and it's nothing to be ashamed of. Most tech is too complicated. There are too many time-consuming tasks, and teams aren't getting the info they need to close deals and connect with customers. Don't worry, HubSpot's customer platform can help. It was built to save time and make your job easier, so you can get back to building your business. No more hours wasted on time-consuming tasks. No more chasing down prospect info. No more one system for this, another for that. HubSpot can help you find leads, reach prospects, and deliver the insights you need to convert them to customers, all in one place. Plus, HubSpot AI can literally do more of your work for you, so you can focus more on scaling your business. Because HubSpot knows you have some big growth goals, and they're here to make your productivity problem no problem at all. Visit HubSpot.com to learn how they can help you grow better. Today in the tank, we have DaVinci AI. Now, DaVinci AI is brought to us by founder Sam, who's asking for $350,000 for 5% in his business, which is a whopping $7 million valuation. Now, the problem that DaVinci AI is trying to solve for is, you know, drawing is really hard, and your results don't always meet expectations, even if you really tried to master the skill over the pandemic and you're really trying to be good at drawing, sometimes you just don't have the skill. Feels a little personal there, DaVinci AI. So Sam's solution is an app which basically uses augmented reality tools to help you trace whatever image you want from your phone on real surfaces. So you can sort of think about this as like if you downloaded the app on your phone, you'd set up a tripod, it would project an image onto whichever kind of canvas you were working on, and you could trace your photo. And then using a patented system of technology, it sometimes even gives you like the step-by-step on how you should go about drawing whatever you're trying to draw. So it's a bit of art, bit of tech. Thinking about our founder and our product and our pitch, initial thoughts.
Well, listen. He is a magician and he did a magic trick. And the problem is that magic tricks are not the same as a great pitch on Shark Tank.
Correct.
In a magic trick, you build anticipation, you leverage deception, and you amaze people at the end with an extraordinary result. Mind-blowing result. Which was his pitch.
Basically his pitch structure.
Shark Tank pitches are literally the opposite of that.
Don't do
you
that.
You literally want no deception. You want to start with very high expectations at the start, leverage no deception, and you want to amaze people from the start. And so I think he got too obsessed with his story, not with the substance of his pitch. And I think that that caused it to just go off the rails. This is a classic opportunity for a repitch.
Ooh,
I would love to repitch.
Repitch it, John.
Repitch.
You want to do a repitch?
John, do a repitch.
Okay.
Jory and I are the sharks.
Sharks, I'm here today seeking $350,000 for 5% of my company, DaVinci AI. I've built the number one augmented reality phone app that can turn any person into an artist. And it turns out lots of people want to become artists. Since our founding 3 years ago, we have achieved X100,000 downloads. We have become the number two paid app in the App Store, and we have made $2.2 million in revenue. And being a software company, that means that revenue has led to a sweet, juicy margin of X percent. We didn't find out in the pitch. I'm here today because post-pandemic, our revenue has flatlined. We've pivoted our business model to increase the lifetime value of our customers, but we need capital and expertise to attract more customers to this product. There's my pitch.
Wow.
That was so
no
good.
No optical illusion
tight,
necessary.
Clean,
right.
Direct.
You know upfront what the business is in, like what they've been through, what their journey is, and where he needs help. I think that was like the biggest thing. Could have been more structured. The product itself, I think, is too early. So he mentioned that it's based off of this concept in art, which is like camera obscura, which is you have this dark room and then you have lights. And essentially, it's a projector that you can then like trace after. I think besides like the actual demonstration of it really kind of hampered it when they had Daniel like come down and try to draw and it did not look anything like any of the examples.
It was not good. It
wasn't very good.
So I think this is a case where the concept is cool of leveraging AI, but like this could be something where it could be improved on, where if they trace that your pencil is going a certain way to correct it and say red line, like actually tilt your pencil a little bit
that's
more.
Smart,
so I just think it's too early. The idea is there. Mm-hmm. Story was everywhere. Pitch was everywhere. But I think if they spent a few more years really perfecting like the guidance of that, like this could be utilized in elementary schools or paint nights or, you know, a lot of other like areas for amateur artists to like have that opportunity.
To empower them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a really good insight, Ariel, because I think the market for this is pretty good. Like lots of people want to become better artists. And mm-hmm. I kind of feel the same way. When he first presented it, the idea of it, I was like, I kind of want that. I'm so
bad at drawing.
Embarrassed that I can't draw. Mm-hmm. My 5-year-old daughter will be like, oh, Dada, you want to draw? And I'm like, I can't.
Absolutely not.
It's got so bad that she actually said to me recently, she said, you know, Dada, sometimes you just have to keep trying and keep working and learning. Aww. And then you can become a good artist.
Your
and
daughter like, also oh sounds God, right. like a Southern gentleman.
I'll sit down and draw. And I like drew some scribbles on a page. I'm so embarrassed. So this speaks to me. I want it to be good. But to your point, Ariel, like, seems like the connection between the promise and the delivery is a pretty wide gap there.
So is your official advice then to just like keep refining the tech and then look for investors? Because like what happens if he needs capital now to even refine the tech?
I agree, Joy. I think this is something where spend a few more years, continue to prove it out in the market or find a few edge cases. Like maybe it is like John's daughter who's maybe watching YouTube videos, step-by-step guides, mm-hmm. like try and draw her favorite like cartoon character. Have more case samples of that. And I think that could make a much stronger pitch and come back to Shark Tank later to repitch it.
Yeah. I will say, though, for a product that we're arguing doesn't have product market fit, I mean, he did do like 2022 sales of almost $900,000. I don't know what he did in 23. I guess he didn't really talk about that. So maybe it's just really gone sideways. Hmm. But I do think he seems to have momentum. It's not like he's got like no users.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, he's sold $2.5 million worth of revenue on this product. I think he's got to just understand, has he retained those customers? Can he monetize them better? And that is what I would use to fund ongoing product development.
The devil is in the details, right? Because it was almost like as he kept going and unveiling details, he lost more and more shark trust. So as you mentioned, John, we didn't grab the 2023 numbers because I don't think they even got there, because it was almost like he kept going back and forth between, well, it was around, and the sharks were like, we need exact numbers right now. And he's like, well, it was sort of between maybe this. I couldn't tell if it was that the founder wasn't prepared, or maybe it was like he was super nervous and so his memory wasn't there, or if he was like willingly trying to magic trick his way to success with the sharks.
I mean, I get that. How many times have we been in a presentation, someone throws out a left field question and you're mm-hmm. like, oh, wait, gotta pivot. So like, I think it's one of those instances.
Yeah.
One thing that we did get numbers on, I was curious on your take, is like his cost per acquisition. Okay. So say he doesn't get a Shark Tank investment, but it seems like he has a pretty low cost per acquisition. He mentioned it was between 10 cents and 21 cents.
No.
Given his pivot into social. So if he, oh no.
It's not his cost per. There's no effing way he's getting 10 cents per customer.
Hives.
Are you kidding me? Maybe 10 cents per click.
Yeah,
or impression, but like, yeah, I don't think so.
Unpack that stat.
I don't think so. Cost per acquisition is what you actually pay for somebody to convert into a paying customer. Mm-hmm. And typically when you're calculating it, it's in the context of advertising, most likely digital advertising, because it's very traceable mm-hmm. and trackable and attributable. And so what you do is you say, well, you have to start at the top of your funnel and you say, I serve a bunch of impressions. And I pay money for that. And I get a certain number of clicks. And so you have a cost per click there. Sometimes the ad platforms let you pay per click. And then those people have to go to your website or to your app and they have to download the app. And you lose a bunch of those people. A lot of people fall off. Mm-hmm. And then they have to go through a sign up flow and you lose a ton of people. A lot of people fall off. And then they have to actually like pay you money and like tons of people fall off. And so like these funnels like end up converting at very small percentages. And so if his cost per acquisition is 10 cents, then that means he's paying like 0.01 cents per click, which I think not.
I think not, friend.
Meta and Google are two of the biggest companies in the world, and they are excellent at getting money from people. So I don't think I can believe his numbers there.
Yeah. So he definitely lost your trust there.
Yeah. I think he probably meant 10 cents per click or something like that.
Yeah. That seems more like a CPC.
Okay. So if it's a customer acquisition game, right? So he needs to get more users. He's moved to this subscription model. So rather than like buying the app, you can purchase a subscription where it's $19.99 a year. How would you recommend that an app that might be a little new to the market, so we're talking like early adopter territory potentially, really acquires those customers and like starts to scale?
So there has to be some kind of value, whether it's self-paced lessons or some kind of advertising stream. He didn't really have that plan of how he was going to continue to sustain that revenue and really keep that lifetime of the customers that he brings in.
Yeah. I could imagine video advertising working quite well for this, because I think it is the type of product mm-hmm. that probably shows very visually clearly what the results look like. And, you know, just showing a video from above of a phone over a piece of paper with a hand drawing a beautiful picture, I think would go a long way. And I think you could actually serve up video ads on it that would probably get a lot of people to click. You definitely could lean into gifting. Everybody's always looking for hobbies. We're all looking to hobbyize. And so you could definitely go down a path of saying like, this is a great gift to get the person who, you know, you don't know what to buy for, stuff like that.
The hobbyist.
But yeah.
I was curious on your take too, because sure, everyone has like a smartphone. So ideally, it's not such a big obstacle that you would need to use a phone for this. But something that the presentation also started to lean into was like Vision Pro. And the reason I also bring up the Vision Pro is that it's everywhere on the DaVinci Eye website. So it's very clear that he's trying to get ahead of the trend of the Vision Pro, because the first image you see of this in terms of use case
on his website,
is someone using a Vision Pro. Like in the demo on Shark Tank, it was a tripod, but they're tracing using those big old Apple glasses. So what were your thoughts on having an app that is dependent on some technical requirement on behalf of the user?
I don't think there's anything wrong in ensuring that your app is versatile across different
formats,
whether it's like an iPad or a phone. But I think he still has yet to prove out that like there is that strong enough of demand for this and people that are utilizing this multiple times to like justify, yes, someone whipping out their $4,000, $5,000 Vision Pro.
Yeah. I mean, he's just restricting his market tremendously.
Right.
Now, listen, like I bet it works way better on the Apple Vision Pro than looking through a phone.
Mm-hmm.
An AR experience for tracing drawings is going to be like 97 million times better than like looking through an iPhone on a stand above a piece of paper.
Also less clunky.
And so I'd imagine he saw the Vision Pro coming out and thought, my God, this is incredible step up in lower friction and output of my product. Problem is, I think the way to think about betting on new platforms is basically like, if you're an early product and you need to make a lot of money and you can't afford to like lose money, you need the biggest market possible, you can't bet on emerging platforms because your growth is going to be 100% tied to the growth of that platform.
Dependent.
Now, he doesn't have that yet.
Mm-hmm.
If you're an incumbent and you have a lot of money and your growth is not tied to that, that becomes an incremental growth stream for you, is to say, well, we should 100% be on this new platform. Let's just say every year, 1 million people buy an Apple Vision Pro for the next 3 years and I can get 10% of them, then I get, you know, 300,000 new customers. I think that's the way to kind of think about it, is it depends on your market position and what you need to happen.
Well, what the sharks didn't think is that this app was happening
because
slowly but surely, with all of these details and all these numbers and these, well, it's between this and this and maybe this. I love your response to the customer acquisition cost. Amazing. I think that just emulates the sharks 5 for 5, because the numbers ultimately really just confuse the sharks. And one by one, they went out. So unfortunately, Sam with DaVinci Eye did not walk away with a Shark Tank deal. They were not impressed. You know, the biggest magic trick was that Sam made the sharks disappear. Production for today's episode was brought to you by Ari DeSarmo. Editing comes from Robert Hartwig and support from Alfred Schultz. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, or wherever you subscribe to the greatest podcasts ever. That does it for me. See you next week in the tank for another bite. I want to take a break to tell you about a podcast coming to the HubSpot Podcast Network, the audio destination for business professionals. It's called The Next Wave: AI and the Future of Technology. It's hosted by Matt Wolf and Nathan Lands. AI technology is transforming the way we do business, and the media landscape is currently fragmented. The next wave is leading the pack on AI technology and how you can apply it to growing your business. Matt and Nathan are leading AI creators and your guiding light in the AI and technology frontier. Listen to The Next Wave wherever you get your podcasts.